Okay, we're just going to do a quick review of the last sugya that we discussed yesterday, which was towards the end of Mem Zayin Amud Bet. The Gemara brings a Baraita, Eitve Abaye, that Abaye uses to challenge Rabba's position, which is, HaMavashel Gidan Asher B'chalav B'yom Tov V'chlo Lokeh Chamesh. That we have five items that you get Malkot for. You get Malkot for cooking a Gid on Yom Tov. You get Malkot for eating the Gid. You get Malkot for cooking Basar B'chalav. You get a Malkot for eating the basar v'chalav, and then you get lokeh mishum havara. The Gemara here has an issue with the havara, because if you apply the din of ho'il, why is havara problematic? You could use the havara for some other item that he needs. He has some other purpose for it, so the havara should be totally permissible. So according to Rabba, why is havara enumerated in this list of items that you get malkot? So then we go through a sequence in the Gemara now where the Gemara tries to replace the isur of havara. So before we start, I mentioned at the end of yesterday's shiur that I'd like to just go over one issue. The Gemara in Beitza also brings the same braita and says something very interesting over there. The Gemara in Beitza is discussing the issue of what we call mitoch, that on Yom Tov there is a heter ochel nefesh, which is that one is permissible to do melachot on Yom Tov that relate to ochel nefesh. There the Mishnah has a machloki between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel as to how far that extends. Beit Shammai believes that melachot that are mutarot on Yom Tov are only mutarot if they involve ochel nefesh. And that's it. Nothing more, nothing less. Beit Hillel, on the other hand, applies a principle called mitoch. Mitoch shehutra l'ochel nefesh, hutra gam shelo l'ochel nefesh. That just because the melachot is already permissible because of ochel nefesh, therefore we also permit the melachot when it comes to items that are not ochel nefesh. It doesn't have to be directly ochel nefesh, and we apply this principle called mitoch. Mitoch shehutra l'ochel nefesh, or mitoch shehutra l'tzorech, hutra shaganami shelo l'tzorech. Just because it was hutra for tzorech ochel nefesh, it's also hutra shelo l'tzorech ochel nefesh. And that gives us the permission to do many things that we do on Yom Tov, or the melachot that we use on Yom Tov, because, for instance, carrying that we do on Yom Tov. Not all carrying involves ochel nefesh. That's because that by carrying, we say, because it's hutra l'ochel nefesh, it's also hutra lo l'tzorech or lo l'ochel nefesh. The Gemara there in Beitza quotes this Gemara, and it says about the Havara here that that's only according to Beit Shammai, that the Isur Havara can only apply here according to Beit Shammai, who says that Havara that is done for ochel nefesh, you get a permission to do it on Yom Tov, but otherwise you're going to get Malkot. Whereas Beit Hillel says that even if you do something that's Havara, which is supposed to be done for ochel nefesh, you also have a heter mitoch shel tzorech shegam lo tzorech. You also have permission to do it shelo tzorech ochel nefesh. And that is the position of Beit Hillel. The Gemara says Beit Hillel cannot be the authors of this braita. Basically, the Gemara in Beitza says that you can't have Beit Hillel be the authors of this Mishnah, or you have to eliminate Havara because of that. Now, what's interesting is that we have a principle of mitoch that's being applied in the Gemara in Beitza. And now we have a principle of ho'il that's being applied in the Gemara over here. What's the difference between mitoch and ho'il? They seem very similar. Which is that when you say mitoch, it says mitoch, say that you can do something l'tzorach ochel nefesh, you also can do it shelo l'tzorach ochel nefesh. Ho'il says, basically, even though this is not for ochel nefesh, since it's possible to do for someone else, or have a possibility of it being okay, then we allow you to do it. How do they differ? Or are they all connected? Are they correlated? And that's a question that we have to deal with. Tosfot himself, on the spot, asks that question. So the first distinction that we should draw between them, which is important in the Rishonim, drawing a distinction between these two items, is, first of all, mitoch. Mitoch says that I'm transferring davar l'davar. I'm saying just because something is mutar, for instance, havara, lighting a fire is mutar for cooking on Yom Tov, then it's also permissible to make havara for lighting candles, for doing things that are not ochel nefesh on Yom Tov. So that, first of all, that application of mitoch says I take something that's a malacha in one instance with regards to one object, and now I move it over to something else and say that's also permissible. Whereas ho'il is in the same item, meaning that the malacha that you're doing is a malacha that is otherwise ochel nefesh. It just happens to be at a time where it's not ochel nefesh for you, but it's the same malacha and it's the same ochel nefesh. So that's one distinction between them, between mitoch, or the application of mitoch, and the application of ho'il. The question is, do you have to correlate them and say they're the same? If that's the case, that means that Rabba holds like Beit Hillel. Rabba says ho'il over here will hold like Beit Hillel, who applies mitoch and Beitza. And Rav Chista will have to hold like Beit Shammai in the Gemara in Beitza, who says we don't apply Mitoch, and he doesn't apply Hoil over here. The problem with that is, why would any Amora set up his position in the Divrei Beit Shammai? That's very difficult. Why would Rav Chista ever take a position that is, according to Beit Shammai, know that it's not the halacha? So therefore, most of the Rishonim believe that you can separate these two items out, and you can actually differentiate between them. How you differentiate between them is interesting. One of them is, or one way to deal with it, is that the idea of mitoch only applies to havara and hotza'ah. There are some Rishonim that believe, and that's the those are the examples that are brought in the Gemara Beitza on Daf Yud Bet, is havara and hotza'ah. Those are the only two areas where mitoch applies, and therefore Hoil has broader application, which is it applies to the areas outside of havara and hotza'ah. Really, the place that we have Hoil applied is by Bishul. So if that's the case, they really never contradict, or they never meet, because they're talking about different issues entirely. That's one solution to the problem, but doesn't seem like to be a likely solution, because most Rishonim believe that Mitoch has broader application than that. So therefore, the other way to differentiate is the way Tosafot over here mentions, there's a differential that Mitoch have to have Ktzat Tzorech. This is Tosafot L'shitato. Tosafot and Rashi argue on Daf Yud Bet in the Gemara Beitza, that when we say Mitoch Shalot Tzorech Ochel Nefesh, since you can do something for Ochel Nefesh, it's also mutar shelo l'tzorech Ochel Nefesh, for not tzorech Ochel Nefesh. Rashi takes that literally and says, you don't have to have any need at all. It has to have no tzorech Yom Tov whatsoever. You could do what you want, even if it has no tzorech Yom Tov at all, you're permitted to do these melachot. These melachot basically become hutra. Tosafot over there takes issue with Rashi. One of the reasons he takes issue with Rashi is from our Gemara here in Pesachim. And he says, no, that the only time we apply mitoch is when there's a tzorech Yom Tov involved. When there's a necessity on Yom Tov for this item, at least some. Doesn't have to be like Ochel Nefesh, but it has to be at least some sort of Tzorech Yom Tov. And therefore, Tosafot here makes that differentiation between Mitoch to Hoil. He says Mitoch only applies when there is a Tzorech Yom Tov involved. When there is a necessity on this for this item, for this Malachim to be done for Yom Tov itself. Hoil can be applied even when there is no Tzorech Yom Tov. That's number one. The second differentiation he makes is that when it comes to mitoch, you have to have kavanah to the item that you're doing. You have to have intent for the alternative that you're doing, and you're doing it l'tzorech yom tov. On the other hand, hoil, you have to have no intent. Hoil we apply because there's a possibility that it could happen. You don't even have to actually have that in mind. The mere fact that it could happen is enough to be poter you. And Tosafot draws that distinction here. It's in one line in the Tosafot here. It says that Beit Shammai can even hold like Rabba. Beit Shammai, who says that we don't apply mitoch, can hold like Rabba, who does say hoil, because they are two different principles, and they function differently. Mitoch functions at, number one, it has to be a tzorech yom tov, and number two is that you have to have kavanah for the tzorech that you are doing. On the other hand, hoil applies even when there's no tzorech yom tov at all. For instance, the case that we had before, which is ofem yom tov l'chol. Someone who's baking or cooking on yom tov for the weekday. It's clear that there's no tzorech yom tov over there, yet we still apply the din of hoil in that case. Number two is that you don't actually have to have in mind for that purpose, or that alternate purpose. We saw that with regards to shechting, the animal that's dying over there. The Baita said that you don't have to actually eat the kazait. It's just the possibility that you could eat the kazait. That's sufficient in order to make it okay. And same thing with ofem yom tov l'chol. You don't actually have to in mind you're having it for achim. The mere fact that it could be possible is enough to be poter you. And that's how Tosafot here differentiates between those two items. What's interesting is Rashi, in the Gemara in Beitza, who says that mitoch applies even when there's no tzorech at all, for him, mitoch and hoil sound very similar. They apply the same way, meaning that there's no tzorech yom tov in either of them, and it seems that they're applied equally. Maybe according to Rashi, there is no differential between them. But there are achronim who suggest even in Rashi there's a difference, which is that we only apply mitoch at a time when it's re'uya l'tzorech. You can only apply mitoch when it's a time that you would do ochel nefesh. Therefore, you can do something that's shalol ochel nefesh. So, for instance, it's before the suda of the day. So, since it's before the suda of day, then you're going to do havara, and you're going to do bishul for the suda. So, then if it's letzorech, you can also do it shalol letzorech. But after you've eaten your meal, when there's no more any necessity for bishul, then you can't apply mitoch anymore. Then you have to use the application of hoil. And that's exactly the case that we have, which is when you're preparing from Yom Tov to Shabbat, you've already finished your Yom Tov meal. So there, the dispensation of mitoch goes away because you've already done your eating, you've done your cooking, you've done your fire. You don't need them anymore. So now you wouldn't be permitted from mitoch to do anything. But because of hoil, we allow you to do this to prepare for Shabbat. So some of the Achronim suggest, even in Rashi, who says that you don't need a tzorach at all by mitoch, there's still a difference between mitoch and ho'il. There's one interesting shita, is the Rashba in Shabbat. The Rashba in Shabbat makes a comment, and he says, im ein omri mitoch, if you don't hold of mitoch, then v'vadai you don't hold of ho'il. Because ho'il is much more permissive than mitoch. And the Rashba says, therefore, if you're Beit Shammai, who says you don't hold of mitoch, then you definitely don't hold of ho'il. And based on that, he suggests that there is a correlation between the two items. The Rabbi Kiv Eger over there questions the Rashba, including from our Gemara, as to whether that's really the case. But that's an important distinction, important idea to understand here, that even though Havara in general should not be a problem because it's an issue of Mitoch and Havara should be totally fine, why is the Gemara dealing with Ho'il over here if Mitoch should have covered the issue? And that's what the Rishonim are trying to reconcile or deal with, is why is Havara in this Braita being taken care of by Ho'il and not because of Mitoch? And the answer is that it's in cases where Mitoch might not apply. Cases where Mitoch might not apply, then Ho'il can come in and take care of it. But most of the Rishonim believe that the two are separate and they're not necessarily correlated. Just because you hold of Ho'il doesn't mean you hold of Mitoch. And just because you don't hold of Mitoch doesn't mean you don't hold of Ho'il. Okay, that was one issue that I wanted to take care of. The next one is the Gemara's suggestion over here, which is going to become important. The Gemara drops Havara and then puts in Atzei Yashirei, puts in Mukse. It puts in Mukse and says Mukse is Doraita because of what we call Hachana Derabba. Hachana Derabba is that the principle that Rabba stipulates in the Gemara in Beitza, the Gemara Erevin also brings it, that when it comes to the Yom HaShishi, from that he says that you must prepare for Shabbat. That means Chol Mechin the Shabbat, Chol Mechin the Yom Tov, Ve'en Yom Tov Mechin the Shabbat, Ve'en Shabbat Mechin the Yom Tov. That you have to have a weekday prepare for Shabbat, you have to have a weekday prepare for Yom Tov. And this is the idea, if you say Muxas Doraita, but this idea of Hachana Derabba, which is that we demand of you that you prepare on a weekday for the item. And it's not permissible to prepare from Yom Tov to Shabbat. From Yom Tov to Shabbat will be an Iser Doraita if you were to do it. We have the dispensation of Ho'il, but otherwise it would be an issue or an Iser Deoraita. Then the Gemara brings from the statement from Baimine Rav Chista, Vamila Baimine Rav Huna, this concept, is it really true that you can have Muksa Deoraita? Because we have the Pasuk from Yechezkel. Pasuk in Yechezkel excludes certain items. Most of the items that are excluded from that Pasuk in Yechezkel that we discussed yesterday are Asmachtot. We have Limudim for them for other places, and they're simply Asmachtot. In the end, it turns out so many of them are an Asmachta. Tosafot says the last one of the items is a real Limud. He goes, I don't even know if we can say it's a real Limud because everything else is an Asmachta in the Pasuk because we have Limudim from other places for them. Nevertheless, the Pasuk over here suggests that certain things are excluded from being brought as a Korban on Yom Tov. Now, Rashi claims that we're talking about the Olat HaTamid, and these items that are precluded from being used for Olat HaTamid. One of the items that's not precluded over there is Mukse, and that's where the Gemara's question comes from. Tosafot, on the other hand, doesn't think it's talking about Olat, thinks it's talking about a Korban HaPesach, for reasons that, when we said before, that's talking about a Seh Velo Bechor. Why did you have to come to exclude a Seh Velo Bechor? She says, well, it's to teach you, just like Bechor is by Zachar, Seh is something that applies equally to a male and a female. So that's why there's a difference, because Seh is Ra'u Eliyot Ben Zachar Ben Nekeva, and then we say Velo HaBechor, and Bechor is excluded because it's all male. That's what it says. If you're talking about the Tamid also is only a Zachar, it's an Ola, and all Olot come from Zacharim. So then what's the point of this? So that's why Tosafot moves on to a, has to be something like a Shlamim, or a modified Shlamim, which is a Korban Pesach, and he says the Braita is speaking about Korban HaPesach. Then the Gemara rejects that because of the statement of Chista that Mukse is actually not found in this Mishnah, plus from the fact that we don't have Chiluk Melachot by Yom Tov. We do not separate out Melachot on Yom Tov. That means if you're in violation of multiple Isurim on Yom Tov, you only get one set of Malkot. So then how's that going to help? You have Havara and Bishul over here. You can't get Malkot for both of them. Or in our case, it's going to be Bishul and Mukse. You can't get Malkot from them. Tosafot asked the question, what I just said, which is, why didn't the Gemara ask this on Bishul and Havara in the first place? You can't have Makot for both of them. Tosafot says, Eino Chanami. It would be a good question. And the Gemara in Makot actually drops it for that reason and says there's no Chiluk Malachot, therefore you can't have both of them in the Mishnah and get Makot for both of them. Then the Gemara drops that and says, okay, drop Havara and bring in Atzei Asherah. Atzei Asherah, which are Atzei Avodah Zarah. And then Atzei Avodah Zarah are the problem here. So the Gemara says, wait, if they're Atzei Avodah Zarah, then you should get multiple Makot because there's more than one Isur for using Avodah Zarah. So Gemara says, all right, drop Havara and bring in Atzei Kodesh. We're talking about Atzei Kodesh, and the problem is that you're not allowed to burn Atzei Kodesh because of the pasuk Vashrehem Tisrun Beish Osa Tasun Kein Lashem Elukechem. You may not do so or such to Hashem and to Kodesh. And that's the Isser that you're violating over here because you're using Atzei Kodesh, and the Atzei Kodesh gets you the violation of utilizing Kodesh in the wrong way, and you're in violation of the law of Lo Tasun Kein Lashem Elukechem, and you'll get makod for that. And that's how we solve the problem of the Braita, eliminating Havara, and not having this issue of why doesn't Hoyel help over here. So now the Gemara moves on to the final stage here, which is in terms of Psak Halacha, which is Amar Rami Bar Chama. Had Rav Chista Bar Abba, this machloka between Rab and Rav Chista, we're now on Mem Chet Amud Aleph, down in the wider lines, 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 lines down in the wider lines, which is Amar Rami Bar Chama, Had Rav Chista Rabba, this machloka between Rav Chista and Rabba as to whether Hoyel applies or doesn't apply by Yom Tov. Machloket Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yoshuahi. It's similar to the Machloket Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua of our Mishnah. Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua in our Mishnah are arguing about Hoyel, just like Rabbo and Rav Chista are arguing about Hoyel. Basically, we're going to correlate their Machlokot. We'll see in a second what exactly that means, because the Gemara before seemed to have discussed this already and made a suggestion that Hoyel was the Machloket between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. So Rabbi Eliezer, Savar Amrinan Hoyel. Rabbi Eliezer says, we do apply the principle of Hoyel. Rabbi Yeshua Sever, lo amrinan Hoyel. We do not apply the principle of Hoyel. So, Amar of Papa. Rav Papa says, wait a minute. Vidilma, adkan lo kamar Rabbi Eliezer hotam. Maybe it's not so straightforward that Rabbi Eliezer must agree to the position of Rabba over here. Just like Rabbi Eliezer says Hoyel in his case over here, he must say Hoyel by the case of Rabba. Is that really true? Are the two correlated? Because Rav Papa says, Dilma adkan lo kamar Rabbi Eliezer hotam, damrin and Hoyel, why do we apply Hoyel by the case of the chala? Because el d'be'idno adka aile le tanura, when they chalot the dough into the oven, kochad v'chad chazi le didei. Every one of them he could eat. He could possibly eat any one of these items, because he has yet to declare which one of them is the chala. So since he has the possibility of eating any one of them, therefore we can apply the principle of Hoyel, of a hocha. In our case of Hoyel mikle orchim, d'le orchim hu d'chazi, Didei lo chazi. When he's making the item over here, he can't eat it. He's not going to eat it. He already ate his suda. It's not for him. The only possibility of saying Hoyel is for other people, meaning that Orchim, guests, will come up. So, Ema Hochanami, Dolamrin Hoyel. Maybe he would agree, Rav Chista, and say we do not apply Hoyel over here. So, the difference being that in the case of Chala, the Hoyel opens up the possibility that you, the person who's engaged in the Malacha, can partake of any one of the items that you are baking, because any one of them may not be the Chala, and therefore you could eat any one of those items, and that's why we apply Hoyel. But by Hoyel Mikle Orchim, nothing that you are doing is going to benefit you. Nothing that you are doing is going to come to you. It's all going to the Orchim, and maybe over there we do not apply the principle of Hoyel. And that's why Rav Papa says, I don't see that Machlokot have to be correlated. Could be Rabbi Eliezer holds Hoyel in the case of Chala, but it does not hold of the case. It does not hold of Hoyel when it comes to Ofim Yom Tov L'chol. And Avram Ashisha Breid Ravidi, V'dim Alo Hi. Maybe the parallel is wrong again. Ad Gan Lo Kama Rabbi Yeshua Hotam. Rabbi Yeshua over there who says we do not use Hoyel by Chala, because when you look at all these chalot over here, one of them has to end up being the chala. One of them has to, in the end, be designated as the chala, and that means one of the items that you baked is not ra'ui. So therefore, you can't, lo li didei, lo l'orchim, not for you and not for the guests, meaning that it has zero ability to be utilized, it has zero value, because at one point you're going to have to make it into chala. If that's the case, you're really baking challah. You didn't call it challah yet, but at some point you're going to call it challah, and then you bake something that nobody can utilize on Yom Tov. Avahocha, in our case over here, by Ho Mikle Orchim, by the case of Ovim Yote L'chol, the Chazi Miat Orchim, there, at least for the Orchim, they could utilize it on Yom Tov. Ema Hochanami, Omrin and Hoyel. Then maybe in that case we will say Hoyel. So Rabbi Yoshua is also not bound by this. Maybe he says there's no Hoyel by challah, because there, by definition, one of those items is going to become challah, and it's as if you baked something that wasn't ra'uya on Yom Tov. On the other hand, when it comes to Hoyel Mikle Orchim, the principle of Rabba, maybe Rabbi Yeshua can subscribe to that, because over there, every one of the items that you cook or bake on Yom Tov will be utilized and can be utilized by the guests. May not be in the end that they come, but at least it can be utilized by, and there's nothing there that was cooked for no purpose. So maybe, in that case, he will apply Hoyel. So what Rav Papa and Rav Shisha Rav Idi show is that the machlokot don't necessarily line up. They're not necessarily parallel or correlated, and you could separate between the two of them. And since you can separate between the two of them, it's not by definition that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabba of the are the same opinion, and Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Chista are of the same opinion. Could be that Rabbi Yeshua can hold like Rabbi Chista, or he could hold like Rabba, and same for Rabbi Eliezer. He could hold like Rabbi Chista or Rabba. There's no definitive line that we can take here because there are possibilities to explain away their position of Ho'il there and their position of Ho'il over here. Now Rashi, interestingly, asks a question over here with regards to Ho'il, and he says, V'ikasha. Well, isn't there a problem? Hada Amar Rabbi Yeshua, lo zehu chamech muzarim alav min haTorah. Rabbi Yeshua's position is the reason that you don't have to call it challah is because this is not the type of challah that you have to worry about. It's not yours. Since it's not yours, you don't have to worry about it. You can let it become chametz without any care, without any consideration. So because Alma, it's clear from there that late lehoil, because it's clear that he doesn't hold of hoil. Because if he held of hoil, ibai mitchalala, he could reverse this chala and would become his. And just like Rabbi Eliezer says, when you do that, since it has the potential to be yours, it's your problem. So Rabbi Yeshua would have to say the same thing. If he holds of hoil, he would have to say that if there's a potential of becoming yours, it's your problem. So v'ho choshekein hoil d'hocha d'kula. So if he doesn't say hoil by the baking of the bread, where it's the chumrah, then over here by hoil, where you're going to make it the kula, how would he ever agree to that position? So that's what Rashi's question is. Then Rashi gives an answer which he does not like. And one of Rashi's points is that you can't say hoil about something you don't own. You can't say hoil about something that you don't own, that, oh, I could redeem it, or I could buy it, and therefore hoil works. We don't say that. Hoil has to be something that's within your control, within your purview. And therefore, Rashi now goes back and changes the girsa back in the beginning of the sugya. In the beginning of the sugya, the Gemara said that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua argue about hoil. The way he said there, that Amrinan hoil vi ba'ichalala mimonehu, Rabbi Yeshua sabar lo Amrinan hoil. So there we said that the machlok between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua is whether we say hoil that you undermine or undo your designation of chala. Since you can undo your designation of chala, it becomes as if it's yours. Rashi says, no go. That's not the explanation, because hoil doesn't apply to things that are not yours. If you already, the challah belongs or is being given to the kohen, it's not yours anymore, then saying ho does not work, because you can't say ho about something that you don't own. Therefore, Rashi goes back to that beginning of the Gemara and explains it differently. And he says that the ho'il of the Gemara back then was not the ho'il that we thought. He changes the gear so to say ho'il below ho'il, leaves out the mitchel alei. And he says the ho'il or the machlok between Rabbi Eliezer and Yeshua is exactly what we just described in the Gemara here about baking. You take pieces of dough, you have numerous pieces of dough that are chayavim in challah. And then you're going to put them into the oven and bake them to prevent them from becoming chametz. So Rabbi Eliezer says, Hoil, since when you put them in, any one of them could not be the challah or could be the challah, therefore you're permitted to bake these on Yom Tov, and it's not a violation of the Isser on Yom Tov. And that's the Hoil that Rabbi Eliezer is applying. And the Hoil of Rabbi Yeshua that he rejects is exactly that Hoil. He says, look, one of them is going to be challah. Since one of them is going to be challah, you can't apply ho'il over here and say, they're all okay to bake. But what Rashi changes over here and says is that's the idea of ho'il that was back in the beginning of the Gemara, and that's what over here, the attempt by Rami Bar Chama to suggest that Rav Chista and Rabba's machloket is similar to that of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Then we have Rav Papa and Rav Shisha that are trying to say that the two aren't even correlated there. But Rashi changes our understanding of what the ho'il of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua is. Until now, we were explaining that the ho'il was that you had the possibility of undoing the challah. Rashi says that's not why it is. The ho'il over here has to do with the fact that you could bake them and have the potential that every one of them may not be the challah. And then Rashi says, therefore, they require two things. According to Rabbi Eliezer, you'll have these two things, which is, number one, Rabbi Eliezer will say, Tovat Hanah is Mamon. And number two is, that you have the principle of Ho'il. So since Tovat Hanah is considered to be Mamon, so it's considered to be real monetary value, and we apply Ho'il, he's in trouble now because of that Ho'il. So now that's what causes him the problem, because it's Tovat Hanah's Mamon, he has a problem, but then because of Ho'il, he has permission to do it on Yom Tov. On the other hand, Rabbi Yoshua says that first of all, Tovat Hanah is not Mamon, and number two is, that we don't apply the principle of Ho'il. So Rabbi Yeshua says it's not yours. If Tovat Hanah is not Mamon, it's not yours. We don't apply Ho'il, so now you can't bake it. So what you do is you call the challah and just let it go, become chametz. Rabbi Eliezer, on the other hand, believes Tovat Hanah is Mamon. It is monetary value, and that makes it your problem. And if it's your problem, now you have to do something about it. Well, what can you do? It's Yom Tov. So the answer is Ho'il. Ho'il allows you to deal with that problem. So that's how Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua's positions will be understood according to the way we're reading the Gemara now. Now, Amru Rabbanan Kameid Rabbi Yirmiyah and Rabbi Zera. The Rabbanan said over this principle or this idea suggested by Rami Barchama to Rabbi Yirmiyah and Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Yirmiyah Kibla. Rabbi Yirmiyah accepted this and says, yes, the machloki between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua is about Huil. Rabbi Zera Lo Kibla. Rabbi Zera says, no, it's not. It may not be about Huil. So Amalei Rabbi Yirmiyah, Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Yirmiyah says to Rabbi Zera, Milto de Kashalon. We had the problem. We never could understand how to explain the machloki between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer. And went by so many years that we didn't know this. But my pligger, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, about what the core machloket was between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer. Hashtra Amruah Mishmei de Gavra Rabba. Now we're having it quoted in the name of a great Amora that we have an explanation for it, Feloni Kablo, and we're not going to accept it. Why won't we accept this explanation? So Rabbi Zeir responds to him and says, Hey, Kablo, how can I accept it? Anina. And what does it say? We have a Tanakh work that says, Amar le Rabbi Yeshua. Yeshua says to Rabbi Elazar, Lid varecha, harei hu over mishum lo taseh kol melacha. You're in violation of lo taseh kol melacha. You're in violation of baking on Yom Tov itself. Well, why are you in violation of baking on Yom Tov itself? Because we don't say Ho'il. We don't allow you to apply the principle of Ho'il. So what do you see from this? That Rabbi Elazar does not subscribe to Ho'il. Well, maybe he does. Maybe he'll answer Rabbi Yeshua. The problem is, v'shotikle. He doesn't respond. Rabbi Elazar doesn't respond to Rabbi Yeshua. V'ita, if you're correct about the explanation of their machloket, lemila time of didi mishum hoil. Rabbi Elazar should have been able to answer Rabbi Yeshua. No, there's no violation of lo taseh kol melacha here because I have hoil. How come he doesn't say that? Say amalei. So Rabbi Yirmiyah responds to Rabbi Zera and says, wait, v'litameich ha de tanina bebraita. What are you going to say about what's said in the braita? Amar lo Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar says lidvarech. And Rabbi Elazar says to Rabbi Yeshua, according to your way, over mishum bayre bayimatzei. He's in violation of ownership of this chametz, vishotiklei, and he didn't respond to him. What do you mean he didn't respond to him? Does that mean that he now agrees to Rabbi Eliezer's position? No. Hachanami dulo hadolei. What do you mean? So now you're going to say that he didn't respond to him? Hakam hadolei b'matnitin. He answers him in the Mishnah. Ditznan lo zehu chametz shemzumer alav mishum bayireu bayimatzei. He does respond to him, not in that brayta, but he responds to him in our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, Rabbi Yeshua's position is accompanied with an explanation, which is, you don't own it. That's why it's okay. There's no tovat hanah is mamon here. It's not have monetary value. Therefore, you do not own it. And he does explain his position. He doesn't explain in the Braita, but he explains it in the Mishnah. But we see from here, just because he doesn't respond immediately in that Braita, doesn't mean he didn't respond. El shatik lebe Braita, mahad lebe matanitin. He was silent in the Braita, but he answers the question in the Braita. Hachanami, imur shatik lebe matanitin. Let us say that Rabbi Elazar doesn't respond to Rabbi Yeshua in the Mishnah, but in another forum, he answers him. I mean that just because it's not found in this Tanaic work doesn't mean that he didn't respond to him. And you can't draw any conclusions from that. And it should be the explanation of the machloket here between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua should be about Ho'il. As I explained before, it involves two parts. It's not just Ho'il. Because before we suggested that they both hold that Hanat Mamon or Tovat Hanah is not considered to be Mamon. And then we said that machloket is about Ho'il. So Rashi over here says that that's not the case anymore, because that was before we knew what was going on over here. Now that we know the information that we know now, we're going to say that everybody does not necessarily agree that Tovanat Tana is not Mamon, but rather Rabbi Elazar believes Tovanat Tana is Mamon, and that's why you have a problem here. Because you have a problem, you need Ho'il to solve your problem. Rabbi Yeshua believes Tovanat Tana is not Mamon, and since it's not Mamon, you don't have a problem over here, and then he doesn't have Ho'il anyway, so he doesn't need it, but he doesn't have it either. And they're going to argue about both issues, and that's what the machloket is going to be about. Now, the last thing here, Tanya, Rabbi Omer, halacha ki Rabbi Eliezer. The halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Yitzchak Amar, halacha ki ben b'teira. Rabbi Yitzchak says halacha is like ben b'teira, and the Mishnah who says that you drop it into cold water. What you do is you put it into cold water, and that stops the leavening, and that's how you deal with this challah tmeah if you can't bake it on Yom Tov. That's the end of this sugya. The end of this sugya about, with regards to Ho'il, and what we do about Ho'il. So first of all, you can see in Tosafot, there's already a machloket here about whether when Rabbi says halacha k'Rabbi Elazar, is that definitive? Because we know that the halacha is k'Rabbi mechaveiro, that we pass on like Rabbi. When Rabbi argues on any other single Tana, he always trumps. He always wins. Over here, he's arguing with another single Tana. Rabbi says that the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Yitzchak says that halacha is like Ben Beteira. So it's Rabbi versus Rabbi Yitzchak. So Rabbi should trump. And the answer should be that it's halacha ki Rabbi Eliezer. And that's how most of the Rishonim paskin, that the halacha is Rabbi Elazar based on that. Whereas Tosafot, you can see over here, the little Tosafot says, V'ri docha. He says that that's not a proof. Because, Shem aloka mar hocha, Rabbi Michaviro, tafligu rabo v'rav chista b'hochi. Because we have a machloket rabo and rav chista about this. Meaning, where do we say halacha ke Rabbi Michaviro? That's when there's no machloket amoraim under Rabbi's position. But over here, where Rabbi's position also involves a machloket amoraim, over there maybe don't apply this principle of halacha ke Rabbi Michaviro. And therefore, Tosfot says, I'm not sure that we would apply that over here. I'm not sure that the halacha is ke Rabbi Eliezer in this case. That's the end of the Tosfot. What is the halacha? How do we deal with the halacha over here? So what's interesting here is that we have a number of component parts. We have Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. That's one machloket. We have another machloket, Rabbo and Rav Chista, as to regards to Ho'il by Yom Tov. And then, in addition to that, we have a machloket of Rabbo and Rav Chista with regards to something called Hachana de Rabbo. Rabbo believes that there's a problem with preparing from Yom Tov to Shabbat, Mide Oraita. It's dealt with Ho'il, but there's a problem de Oraita. On the other hand, Rav Chista, as we saw before, says that you can Yom Tov Mechin le Shabbat, Midivrei Torah. From the Torah, Yom Tov can prepare for Shabbat without any problem. Now, Erev Tashlin is all an institution de Rabbanan and has nothing to do with the Doraita level. So those are the different aspects of what we are discussing over here. The Rif comes along and says, Halacha ki Rabbi Elazar, that's what Rabbi says over here. Halacha ki Rabbi Elazar, which we're going to see in a second, is Rabbi Elazar on the next side of the Amud. Another case by where Asal Mitzarfam, the basket joins them together to take off Chala after the fact. That's a member of Rabbi Elazar. The halacha is like him there as well. And therefore, the Rif says, Halacha ki Rabbi. Since we paskin like Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbah have the same opinion of Ho'il over here, therefore the locha is like Rabbah. The Baal HaMor says, what are you talking about? Our Gemara just rejected that correlation. We just had Rav Papa and Rav Shisha come along and say that they're not necessarily correlated. Just because Rabbi Eliezer holds of Ho'il doesn't mean that you hold of Rabbah. Just because locha is Rabbi Eliezer, who says locha is Rabbah? And therefore the Baal HaMor paskins locha Rav Chista. He says locha is not like Rabbah, but rather Rav Chista. The Ramban, Kedarko B'Kodesh, comes to defend the honor of the Rif and says, no, the halacha is like Rabbah, but not because of what the Rif says. He says, I have to agree with the Baal HaMor that just because halacha is K'Rabbi Elazar doesn't mean halacha is K'Rabbah over here. But I'm going to tell you why the reason the halacha is like Rabbah is for a different reason, and that is because of Rav. Rav says elsewhere in the Gemara, in other places in the Gemara, that Beitza Shenolda B'Zu Asura B'Zu. If you have an egg that is born on this day, then it's a surah on the next day. So there's a problem of eggs. That problem of giving birth to eggs, which we'll get to in the Gemara and Beitza, again, it doesn't concern us over here, is a problem of mukse, a problem of preparing from Yom Tov to Shabbat. And that's what we're fearful of. We're fearful of the problems of preparing Yom Tov to Shabbat or Shabbat to Yom Tov. From Rav, what we see is that the halacha is like Rabbah by Hachanad Rabbah. That when Rabbah says there's a problem of preparing from Yom Tov to Shabbat or Shabbat to Yom Tov, there's a real issue and an issue midoraita to do that. Because Rav holds that Shabbat and Yom Tov are shtei kedushot, they're not kedusha achat. So therefore, if they're shtei kedushot, the Gemara says that, that Rav says that they could be kedusha achat. The only problem is Hachanad Rabbah. It's Gemara in Erevin, it's Gemara in Beitza, and therefore Rav, if we pass an halacha ke Rav, Rav supports the fact that Rabbah is right, that Hachana de Rabbah is right. Based on that, the Ramban says, well, if the halacha is like Rabbah by Hachana de Rabbah, that means that it's also midoraita to prepare from Yom Tov to Shabbat. The only thing that can deal with that is Ho'il. And therefore, the halacha is like Rabbah in Ho'il as well. And that's the way that the Ramban paskins. So here, so far, we have the Rif who paskins like Rabbi Lezer and Rabbah. We have the Baal HaMor and also the Rabbeinu Ephraim was quoted by the Ramban who paskin like Rav Chista. You have the Ramban himself who paskins like Rabbah, but not for the same reason as the Rif, but because of Rav. And then we have the Meiri. The Meiri has an interesting compromise. The Meiri says, Eino Hanami, I agree with the Ramban and all the Gdolei Tzarfat that say Halacha is ke Rabbah, but I want you to know that if a person bakes on Yom Tov or cooks on Yom Tov and specifically says they're doing it for Chol, they're going to be Chayav like Rav Chista. That Rabbah only applies when you do it silently. When you cook or bake on Yom Tov without saying anything, then we can apply Ho'il and you'll be protected. But if you specifically state that you're cooking for a Chol or for a weekday, then you're going to be Chayav like Rav Chista. So the Meiri has this interesting balance between the two items, interesting balance between whether Halacha is Kirabo or Rav Chista. The main issue or the main thing that's bothering all the Rishonim deal with this is that We paskin that there is chachana d'rabba, and if there is chachana d'rabba, how do I reconcile that with hoil? I have to deal with that balance between, well, when do I apply hoil, and when does the chachana d'rabba come in? So that's something that they're trying to figure out. Why is something asur if hoil always comes and makes it mutar? That's what we saw in the Tosafot yesterday about the idea if you do it very close to dark, when hoil doesn't apply, then chachana d'rabba will come in. There's another Tosafot that suggests that chachana d'rabba does not apply to bishul and afiyah. Bishul and afiyah are not considered to be real preparations, and therefore chachana d'rabba does not apply to them. It's an amazing Tosafot that makes this suggestion based on the Ritzba, who says that chachana does not apply to bishul and afiyah, which are just tikkun. They're not real hachana. And so they're all trying to figure out how I balance between hachana and the fact that the halacha is that we can prepare from Yom Tov to Shabbat. The Rambam, when he quotes halacha, it's unclear as to what his position is. The Beit Yosef suggests that the Rambam's paskening like Rav Chista, which is very interesting, since the Rambam and other places seem to be paskening like Rabba. On the other hand, the Yamshel Shlomo, the Magen Avraham, all think that the Rambam is speaking within the position of Rabba. And he's just explaining, after we have Rabba Hachana D'Rabba, and after we have the principle of Ho'il, this is what the din is. But not that he doesn't think that the halacha is Kirabba. The last thing, just before we go on, is that the Chachmat Shlomo has a very interesting point, and he says that the Ho'il Mikle Orchim only applies in their day, when people used to show up unannounced. But today, when nobody shows up unannounced, you cannot apply Ho'il Mikle Orchim. Which is amazing, because that's the way it would take away all the heter, would take away all the ability for us to cook from Yom Tov to Shabbat, because we don't have the principle of Hoyo Mikle Orchim anymore. So that's what the Chochmat Shlomo says. The Maram, Lubin, Ram Shif all disagree with him and say, no, Hoyo Mikle Orchim still applies to today. It's not a thing where they have to show up. It doesn't have to be that the possible. It just has to be that the possibility of such a thing happening is already what's matir over here. Again, it doesn't have to be that they do show up. It doesn't have to even be that they probably will show up. It just means that the possibility of Orchim show up is enough to take away the Isur Deoraita that you have in this instance. It still has to be, Tosafot keeps mentioning the word shkiach, it still has to be something that's common, because if it's not common, or at least somewhat common, then you don't apply ho'il, because otherwise you wouldn't end up, as we mentioned before, you would have no melechot on Shabbat, because you could apply ho'il to everything. Ho'il sakanat nefashot, it's mutar, so therefore everything's mutar. So you can't say that ho'il applies across the board no matter when, so we have to limit it somehow, and the way Tosafot says it, it's the difference between shkiach and lo shkiach. And that's what drives the Chachamet Shlomo to suggest that maybe it doesn't apply today, because the other Achronim disagree and say that it still applies today, and they don't understand where he got that from, that Hol Mikle Orchim doesn't apply today. Okay, so now we're going to move on in the Gemara. Gemara wants to know, what's the proper way to bake Yom Tov so that it won't turn into Chametz? I mean, not a Yom Tov on Pesach, that you want to protect it from Chametz. What size is manageable? So Rabbi Shmuel, Ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan, Ben Brokwa, Meir, Bechitim, Kabayim, that when you do Tim 2 Kav, is the amount that you want to work with, because otherwise it's too hard to work with. Ubisorim shlokabim. And when it comes to barley, you want 3 kav you can work with. So Rabbi Natan Omer Mishum Rebelazar Chiluf Tvarim. It's just the opposite. Just the opposite, because Saor becomes leavens much faster, or ferments much faster, and therefore you should be working with smaller quantities of Saorim and larger quantities of Chitim. Now the Gemara says, V'atanya. You have a bright that says, Rabbi Shmuel, B'no Shor Rabbi Yochanan Ben Brokwa, Mer B'chitim Shloshet Kabim. Sorim arba'a kabim. When it comes to chitim, you can work with 3 kav, and when sorim, with 4 kav. So that's a bigger amount. How come one brayta is saying 3 and 4, and the other brayta is saying 2 and 3? What's the difference between them? Lokasha ha bechasichta ha bemalyoto. Has to do with the grade or the quality of the flour. When you're talking about low-grade grain or low-grade flour, then you can work with a larger quantity. Ha bemalyoto. When it comes to the better grains, then you work with smaller quantities. The reason being that when you have better grade grain or better grade dough or flour, then when you work with it, you're going to, the production of what you're going to end up with is a larger amount. When you work the lower grade, what's end up happening is a lot of the stuff's going to go to waste, or it's not going to work. So therefore, you end up with the same amount. The net amount, when you start with the gross number, is going to be the same. If you start with higher quality flour or higher quality grain, and start with lower quality grain or lower grade flour, and the end product, what you're going to produce, is going to be the same volume. Just a question of what you start with versus what the volume is that you end up with. And therefore, in this case, when we mention the larger quantities, that's just talking about lower grade items. So, Amar Papa Shmamina, from this you hear, green chite chasichta mechite malio. That lower quality wheat is much worse than higher quality wheat, because much more, meaning that in relationship to tfei, Migarin de sare chasichta, de green sare chasichta misari maliota. Then the differential between lower grade barley from higher grade barley. Basically, what he's saying is that the ratio for wheat is that with higher grade grain or higher grade flour, you use kabayim, you 2. With a lower grade, you use 3. That means that the loss that you encounter from using lower grade is 1/3. You lose 1/3 of your production by using lower grade grain or lower grade flour. On the other hand, by barley, it goes from 4 down to 3. You do 4 with the lower grade and 3 with the higher grade. That means you're only losing 25% or a quarter of the volume when it gets going into lower grade quality. So the point of the Gemara is here that lower grade wheat is much more punishing than lower grade barley. When it goes to lower grade wheat, you're going to lose 1/3 of your volume by going to the lower grade, whereas by lower grade barley, you only lose 25% of the volume. And that's what the Gemara says here, that the ratio or the lower grade wheat is worse in relationship to the upper grade wheat than the relationship between the lower grade barley to the upper grade barley. Tila hatam tilta, because over there by wheat, it is 1/3. V'hachariva, and by barley, it's only 1/4. It's only 25%. So Amarav, kava mulugna. If you have a kav being a measurement, this is a dry measurement, the kav, from this place called Lugna, the pisla, that's what you should use. That's what you should be baking for Pesach, and that's the proper size that you can manage and not worry about it becoming chametz. V'chein l'chala. And it's also the amount of dough that if you're working with it, you're going to be chayav in chala. So it's both the measurement that is manageable for chametz, it's also the amount that's going to make you chayav in chala. Mar says, what do you mean? How can you have a kav that's chayav in chala? But not. We have a mishnah, chameshid ravim kemach, ve'od chayavim b'chala. 5/4 of a kav of flour is chayav in chala. So question as whether the word ve'od should be in here. Tosafot keeps the ve'od in here. Rashi eliminates the girsa of ve'od. I'll discuss that in 1 second. So hachi kamar. This is what Rav meant. Kava melugnai nami ahai shira koi. The kava melugnai lives up to that amount. The kav in this place called melugnai is equivalent to 5/4 of a kav that makes you chayav in chala. Now, in terms of the chiyuv chala, 5/4 of a kav, that's something that we've bumped into a number of times before, and basically is premised on the fact that the chala comes from the midbar, or the isat midbar. And we know that from the Torah it says, Reshit arisotechem chala tarimu trumak yitrumat goren kein tarimu otah. That from the reshit, the beginning of your arisa, of your dough, you have to take off the chala. Now, how do we know what the arisa is? Well, the arisa is the isa of the bar, is the dough of the midbar. And what is the amount of the dough of the midbar? Zeh adavar asher tzivah Hashem liktu mimenu ish lefi ochlo om lagul golet. Mispar nafshutechem ish lasher balo tikachu. Vaomer asrit haifahu. So we know that an omer is the amount of an isa of dough for each individual. And the Torah tells us the size of an omer is asrit haifa, is 1/10 of an eifa. So in the midbar, the amount of dough that will be chayav in chala is an asrit haifa, 1/10 of an eifa. Now, an eifa is equal to 18 kav. And that means if you take 1/10 of that, that 1.8 kav is what's going to make you chayav in chala. The problem is our Gemara here says 5/4, which is not the equivalent of 1.8. That has to do with the fact, and we've discussed this many times, is that they grew the midot. They moved up the measurements. The size of the containers of a kav moved up. I mean, that was a kav midbar. We're speaking about here 1.8 kav midbar. Then they moved to Yerushalayim. And in Yerushalayim, they made the measurements bigger. They made them 1/6 bigger. That means that whatever a kav midbar would fit into, you'd only need 5/6 of the new measurements in the kav Yerushalmi in order to get to what the kav midbar was. So if you required 1.8 kav in the midbar, you'd only require 5/6 of that in the new measuring cups that are 6 bigger in Yerushalayim. So if you take 1.8 times 5/6, or you take 18/10 of a kav times 5/6, that gives you 15/10 or 1.5 kav Yerushalmi. So 1.5 kav Yerushalmi is chayav and chala. But that wasn't where they stopped. In Sipori, again, they moved the measurements up another 6. And that means that whatever is of the Yerushalmi size, you only need 5/6 of that in the new kav, which is the kav at Sipori. So if that's the case, you take 1.5, you take, or 3/2, and you multiply it by 5/6, you end up with 15/12 or 5/4 of a kav. And that's how we get from the Asirita Ifa, which is in the Midbar, to the modern day, in Sipori, the modern day measurements, which are 5/4 of a kav. And that's what it means, Chameshi Rivaim here. 5/4 of a kav, it was what Chayav in Chala. So that is the reason that we get to this measurement, and that's how we calculate this measurement. Now, the machloket here between Rashi and Tosafot as to whether the word va'od is placed in here, according to Rashi, we eliminate the word od, because you only need 5/4 of a kav, and he's right. You only need 5/4 of a kav to be chayav in chala. There is an opinion of Rabbi Yossi the Mishnah, who believes that the 5/4 of a kav is what's left over after you take off chala. So you actually need you'll need an amount that's 1/24 bigger than that, because that's the amount of chala that's taken off, 1/24. And if you take that, that's what gets you to the amount, the full amount of the dough. And that's what if you, Achamesh Ravim Kemach Ve'od would be a Lashita at Rabbi Yossi. And that's what Tosafot says over here. You can leave it in the Gemara because it's Lashita at Rabbi Yossi. And that's why they add in the word Ve'od. Right? Rashi goes through the calculation. I'll send you the pictures, the diagrams to show you how he makes the calculation to get from the Isat Midbar to the Isat Sipori and how we get to 5/4 of a kav in Sipori from the Asirita Ifa in the Midbar. So now I'm Rabbi Yosef. Hani Nashedi Dan. Our women, Nahog the Meifa, Kapiza, Kapiza the Piska, they bake very small amounts, the size of a Kapiza at a time for Pesach, in order to prevent it from becoming Chametz and from being unwieldy. They cook a Kapiza at a time, which is Shloshet Lugim, 3 log at a time. So I'm like, Vaye, my datech, the Chumra. He says, wait, you think they're being so Machmir because they're doing much smaller amounts of dough so they can protect it against Chala, protect it against it becoming Chametz? Chumra died to the kulu. It's a chumra that actually ends it up with a kula. To come after they make challah. By doing these smaller amounts, they actually not chayat in challah anymore. So yes, it's better in terms of chametz because they're working with smaller amounts. But in the end, they're not going to be giving challah anymore. They're not going to be doing the mitzvah of challah. So the abdon ki Rabbi Eliezer. They do like Rabbi Eliezer, the Tanan. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, harudev and otein lasal. One who scrapes off the bread from the oven and puts them into a basket. Hasal mitzarfan the challah. The basket joins them together to make them a single entity with regards to challah. V'am Rabbi Yehuda, Shmo Locha ki Rabbi Eliezer. The Locha is like Rabbi Eliezer. This is what I mentioned before, that the Rif connects all these. He says, Halacha ki Rabbi Eliezer over here, Halacha ki Rabbi Eliezer in the previous Gemara, and Halacha ki Rabba because of that. And he says the two Rabbi Eliezers are correlated. The fact that Rabbi Eliezer allows you to take the challah after the fact and put it into a basket to be mitzareif, to join it together, is the reason that he says you can call challah after the fact. You can make it into challah after the fact because of this. Tosafot and Rashi before discussed the fact that maybe the two are not correlated, and that even without his opinion over here, you could get to the conclusion of the other opinion, but the Rif sees them all as being correlated. So what Abaye was suggesting is that's a chumrah that you thought that they were baking with less. Rav Yosef, his Rebbe, is saying that the women bake lower amounts to prevent it from becoming chametz. Abaye says, what type of chumrah is this? Turns out to be a kula, you're not going to have challah. Rabbi Yosef's response is, no, we have Rabbi Eliezer. After they finish baking everything, they put them into the basket, all together in the basket, and then when they're all together in the basket, then they take off challah. So they're seeing mafrishot challah, but they do it in a way, they bake them in a way that prevents them from becoming chametz. So I'm Levi, Itmar Lam, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Lo Shanu Eloki Karot Shel Bavel. The only time that you can use this after the fact is when you're talking about the loaves of bread like in Bavel, which are circular and wide. Then when you bake them in the oven, they end up getting a little stuck together. They touch each other. That's what happens today. If you go and you bake chalot in the oven, a lot of times they expand and they end up touching each other a little bit. They come connected. Or the rolls, anytime you go in the store and you buy the rolls, some of them are attached together. In those chalot, they kiss each other. They're attached to each other. So that's the case when you can sareif them after the fact. Aval ka'achin, if they are narrow types of rolls that do not touch each other, lo, then you don't have to, you can't do it after the fact. You can't join them together after the fact. So when it says, I'm Rabbi Chanina, afilu kachin. We have Rabbi Chanina who says that even with rolls that don't touch each other, you can still be mitzareif them. You can join them together in the basket after the fact, and maybe mafrish challah in that case. Ba'i Rabbi Yirmiyah, tavla she'en la levaz bezin. If you have a platter that does not have a rim around, does not have an edge around it, found in Masechet Kelim, the Mishnayot there talk about it a lot, because levaz bezin, these rims make it into a toch that has an inside to the kli. So without this, you have basically a pshute, something that's totally flat, whether it's pshute kli, it's whatever the kli is, but it's something that's totally flat. So mao, can that work to join together these items, the bread after the fact, or the matzah after the fact, to make it chayevet in challah? Toch kli be'inan, chaleka. We need it to be inside a kli, inside a basket, inside of something. You don't have that here because you have a flat utensil. Well, dilma avir kli be'inan. We just need it to be together, something that causes them to be in a joint airspace. And the Kli does it. Even if it doesn't have an inside, it's just that the boundaries of the Kli define what is connected here. Vayika, and that you do have over here, Teiku, that is unresolved. Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Asal Mitzarfan, the basket joins them together after the fact. Rabbi Shua Omer, Tanur Mitzarfan, that the oven joins them together. Rashi says when it says Tanur Mitzarfan, means Af HaTanur Mitzarfan, even the oven is Mitzaref them. Certainly the basket will be Mitzaref them, even though in the Yerushalmi it seems that it's Tanur Dafka and not Sal. Shimon Gamliel Omer, Kikarot, Shel Belvel, Shenoshkot, Zumizum, Mitzarfot. Shimon Gamliel says that it's these Kikarot and Bevel that touch each other. Those are the ones that can be mitzdareif, or those are the ones that are mitzdafot, and you can take off chala after the fact. We paskin like Rabbi Eliezer, and as I mentioned before, anytime to go bake matzot, that's exactly what they do. They make all the matzot, and after the fact, they put them into a large basket, or large trolley, and they cover them over, and they're mafrish chala for all the matzot that are in that after the fact, so they don't have to deal with the fear of it becoming chametz in the meantime, and causing problems in the factory or baking of the matzot. So they do it once everything's baked, then they take off the challah, so they know that that challah, again, has no issue because it's already matzah, it's already baked, and it's not going to rise or cause any issues. Okay, next Mishnah. Rabbi Gamliel Omer, Shlosh Nashim Lashot Ke'achat. Three women can work together. They can start kneading together. Vofot B'tanur Achat, they had very small ovens, and they can only do one at a time because they put in their dough to fill out the oven. So they can start all kneading together at the same time, and then one by one, they can place it into the oven, zuah herzu, sequentially, and we don't worry about the fact that the latter ones are going to have problems with chametz. You're right, the three women can be working together, but they all are in different stations. They're not in the same place. Achat lasha, one of them is kneading the dough. Vachat orechet, and one of them is setting it up, braiding it, and basting it. Vachat ufa, one of them is baking it. So that's how you have a process. In the Gemara, exactly how that's working. Rabbi Kiva Omer, lo kol anashim, v'lo kol eitzim, v'lo kol tanurim shavim. Not all women are the same. They don't all work at the same speed. Lo kol eitzim, not all wood is the same. Some wood is dry, some is moist. And the question of how hot the fire gets depends on the dryness of the wood. Lo kol tanurim shavim, and not all ovens are the same. Some ovens are hotter, some are cooler. Depends how long the oven was on. Zaklau, this is the principle that Rabbi Kiva sets out. Tafach. If it begins to expand, it begins to ferment or leaven, to tosh bitzonein. You baste it with cold water. You put cold water on it to stop the leavening process. As we saw before, that cold water is a retardant for the leavening process. Now, the word tiltosh or litush in modern-day Hebrew means to polish or to smooth out. So the same thing over here. It means to put the cold water on the challah in order to prevent it from leavening. So Tan Rabbanan. The Rabbanan, now we're going to explain what it means, the Chachamim's position in the Mishnah, that three women work at the same time. Asha. He mikatefet. The woman who was originally, she starts out alone and she's kneading. When she moves on to be mikatefet, when she moves on to basting and fixing the chalab to put it onto the oven or into the oven, then v'chaverta lasha tachta. The second woman begins to knead when she moves on to the second station and she's working on the kituf. Umikatefet. And then when the woman who is basting or working with the chalab, he ofa, then she moves on to the baking station, v'chaverta mikatefet tachta. Then the first woman who was now kneading moves over to the kituf, vashlishit lasha. And then the third one begins kneading her dough, ofa. Then when she's finished baking, she goes back to the first station, he lasha. She goes back and now starts kneading again, v'chaverta. The second woman who was now doing kituf moves on, v'ofa tachta. She bakes the bread under her. Vashlishit mikatefet. And then the third one was just kneading, moves up a station, and she's starting to do kituf, the basting, or the working, setting out of the dough. V'chozeret chalila. And it goes around and around and around. I mean, you keep this circular pattern so that the women are always working with the dough. It's never left to a point that it could rise. V'yos kozman shosekot v'batzeik. As long as they're working the dough, enu balidei chimutz. Leavening cannot take place when you're engaged with the dough. As long as you're engaged with the dough, there's no problem. So if you're moving it around or you're doing it, it's not going to rise. And therefore, the Chachamim lay out this idea or this process by which each of the women will be doing something so that nobody is stuck or stationary because they're each moving through the stations at different times. So, Rabbi Omer, lo kol anashim shavot. Not everybody's equal. How can you give an objective standard when you're dealing with human beings over here and you're dealing with items, kleilim, that are different? So, Tanya, I'm Rabbi Akiva, danti lifnei Rabbi Gamliel. I was learning, I was discussing this issue before Rabbi Gamliel. Yilam deinu rabbeinu. B'nashim's result. B'nashim's result. Is our mission talking about a case where the women are expeditious? Or is it a case where they move in a slow pace? Beitzim lachim? Is our Mishnah talking about a case where the wood is moist? Or beitzim yveshim? Or is it talking about dry wood? Betanur cham? We're talking about an oven that was already heated up? Mutanur tzonin? Or is it starting from scratch? Samali, in the chalamash shanu chachamim. We only have whatever the chachamim told us. Zaklal, this is the principle. Tach, totosh betzonin. If it expands, then you put it into the cold water, you pour cold water over it, you stop it from expanding. We can't determine how every woman is going to be or what the situation is going to be with each woman. And therefore, we have to have an objective standard. The objective standard is if you have a problem, get it into the cold water. And that's the only thing. Other than that, we can assume that you're going to do it right or that people are going to work the dough and make sure that it doesn't rise. Yes, there are different paces and different timings, but we can't get all of those down. And we can't get to, we're going to tell you how to do it or what the best way to do it is. But if you see there's a problem, drop it into the cold water. Okay, next Mishnah is something we bumped into early in the Masechta with regards to Machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. When you have dough that starts to have an appearance of leavening, when does it become a leavened bread? So now the Mishnah says, Seor Yisareif. That when it's Seor, you have to burn it, Bochlo. But if you eat it, Patur, then you don't get Malkot. Siduk, if it has cracks in it, Yisareif, it should be burnt. Bochlo, if you eat it, Chayav Karet. Then it's really Chameit, and you're Chayav Karet. Bezu Seor. When is something called siur? Kigarnei chagavim. That's when it has antennae like a locust, like the grasshoppers. I mean, you have cracks going in different directions, some here, some there. Siduk. What does siduk mean? What does it mean, cracked? It's when it's totally cracked and they're all touching, all the cracks are touching each other. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. That's the position of Rabbi Yehuda. So as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, it's called chametz gamur when it's cracked all over the place. When it has kigarnei chagavim, when it has like the antennae of the locust or the grasshopper, then it's Yisareif, you burn it, but you're still not Chayav if you eat it, because it's on the way to becoming Chametz, but it's not full-fledged Chametz. On the other hand, if it's just pale, or it's changed the color a little bit, then you can eat it. It's not even Chametz at all. Chamim Omrim, Chamim, who is the position of Rabbi Meir, as we'll see, Ze v'zeh ochlo Chayav Karet. Whether the siur that you described, or the siduk you described, if you eat it, you're Chayav Karet for eating. Jesus Seor. So then what's Seor where you have to burn it, but you don't get Malkot for it? Koshech Sifu Panav. It's when the face of it, or the complexion of it, looks pale. Kadam She'amdu Se'arutav. Like a person whose hair is standing on end. When a person gets scared, when a person is fearful, they become pale. The blood drains out of their face, and they become totally pale or white or ashen. That's what we're talking about. So that whiteness, that paleness of the dough, is an indication of Seor, according to Rabbi Meir. Sutan Rabbanan, Ezu Seur. What is Seur? Koshich Sifu Panav, Kadam Shamdo Tzarutav. That is, anybody whose face is pale, like a person that is fearful, that is shaking in their boots, and their hair is standing on end. Siduk, what is Siduk? What's the definition of Siduk? Karnei Chagavim. That's called Siduk. Divrei Rabbi Meir. That's the position of Rabbi Meir, which is akin to the position of the Chachamim in our Mishnah. And that's what I said before. The Chachamim in our Mishnah are Rabbi Meir. Chamim Omrim, the Chamim over here are equivalent to the Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah. Ezeu Seor Kirkane Chagavim. Siduk, Shnitarvu Stakav Zebezeh. So Seor is only when you have some cracks that are there, just they are random or moving all over the place. Siduk is when they all connect, there's a lot of cracking over there. Then, in those cases, you have a din. One is Seor and one is Kane Chagavim. Zebezeh, Ochlo, Chayav Karet. And if you eat either one of them, you're Chayav Karet. Now that's difficult, because we had this in Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah, and Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah only says when it's takim, when all the cracks meet with each other, then it's chametz, you get karet. But when it's karet chagavim, you don't get karet. So v'hanan t'nan, seor yisareif, ochlo patur, you're patur when you eat it. Tevrei Rabbi Yehuda. So Gemara says, no, eman the Rabbi Meir. This statement is made by Rabbi Meir. Ze v'zeh, ochlo chayav karet. According to Rabbi Meir, what Rabbi Yehuda differentiates between seor and siduk doesn't really exist for Rabbi Meir. For Rabbi Meir, those are all in one category, and they're considered to be complete chametz according to Rabbi Meir. And that's what it means. Zev ezeh ochlo chayav karet. Alibet to Rabbi Meir. That which Rabbi Yehuda defines as seor and siduk is chayav. Amar Rava, my time of the Rabbi Meir. What is the reason of Rabbi Meir? In the chakos sedek v'sedek milamala. You don't have cracks up above. Shein lo kama stakim milamata. Where you don't have major cracking down below. The fact that there are small cracks on top is evidence of the fact that there is a larger number of crackings or hardness that is set in down below, and the leavening process has begun. The outside is just evidence of the fact that there's a much greater problem internally, where there's much more cracking. therefore, only with a small number of cracks, we're already going to be suspicious that internally there's a larger number of cracks, and that's why it's problematic. Rabbi Yehuda obviously does not believe like that and doesn't worry about if you have cracks on the outside. We assume that the same cracks on the inside. We don't assume that the inside is much worse off than the outside. Okay, we'll stop over here.